Thank you, gentlemen. The case is submitted. We'll hear arguments next in Federated Department Stores against Moiti and others. Chapman, I think you may proceed whenever you're ready.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, the petitioners are here to ask the court to reverse a decision of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which we believe is not only contrary to established principles, but creates a very serious practical impediment on the ability of district courts to coordinate and control multi-party complex litigation. It is our submission that the decision of the Ninth Circuit cut back on the normal rule of finality of judgments in the context of multiple party, multiple action litigation, which is exactly the opposite of what should have been done. That is, in these classes of cases, there is more rather than less need for adherence to res judicata and the rule of finality. We would like to take a few moments to describe briefly the background of this case and how it comes to this court, and then to present what we consider the principal reasons why we believe that the Ninth Circuit decision is contrary to established principles of res judicata and out of step with the salutary trend in improving the abilities of the district courts to control and coordinate complex cases. The present case, Your Honors, started the same way as have hundreds of class action cases in the federal courts. It's a class action for treble damages and attorney's fees and other relief following on the heels of a federal government action. In April of 1976, the federal government obtained a misdemeanor indictment against petitioners under Section 1 of the Sherman Act, charging that the petitioners had agreed on the prices of women's clothing in their stores in Northern California. Shortly thereafter, a multiplicity of private class actions were filed. There were seven in all. Two of those were filed by the same counsel. One of the actions, which was entitled Moiti versus Federated and Sachs, has been voluntarily dismissed by the plaintiffs, and that action is not before this court. The other action is the Brown case, which is the only case that is before the court this morning. The complaint in the Brown case, as I say, was largely patterned on the government's pleadings. It alleged that the petitioners had agreed to charge certain prices in their stores on women's clothing, and that the plaintiffs and the class members that were purportedly represented had been injured by being overcharged on those purchases. The one difference was that, unlike the government action and the other six class actions, the Brown case alleged that the violations took place in Southern California rather than in Northern California. The cases proceeded in the district court they were coordinated before a single judge, and in July of 1976, the petitioners moved to dismiss all seven cases for failure to state a claim under Rule 12b-6. There was extensive briefing on the motion. In fact, the district court set aside one entire day for oral argument, and in January of 1977, the district court dismissed all seven cases. There were several issues considered, but the primary ground that was relied upon in the district court's dismissal was that the plaintiffs and class members as retail purchasers did not allege an injury to their business or property which would entitle them to treble damage recovery under Clayton Act Section 4. The parties in five of the other cases appealed, and we've referred to these for convenience in our brief as the Weinberg cases. The Weinberg cases all took an appeal from the dismissal of their actions to the Ninth Circuit. However, Brown deliberately chose to break away from the other cases at this point and did not appeal. When the time for appeal had expired, respondent Brown filed a new action in a municipal court in Palo Alto, Mountain View Judicial District, which was in all material respects absolutely identical to the prior case. And we've referred to these, again, for convenience. The prior dismissed action is Brown 1. The second action, which is the action now before this court, is Brown 2. As I say, Brown 1 and Brown 2 were essentially identical. The same parties were involved, were alleged. There were the same descriptions of trade and commerce, exactly the same offenses charged, the same alleged effects of the offenses were charged, the same time period was covered, a period up to April 1974, the same geographic area was covered in both complaints. There were the exact verbatim allegations of fraudulent concealment and verbatim the same allegations of the alleged injury. The only difference, which we submit and we believe the both courts below perceived as cosmetic differences, was that the word antitrust was not mentioned in the Brown 2 complaint. Instead, the complaint was framed in terms of four theories under California law: fraud and deceit, unfair business practices, civil conspiracy, and restitution. But there has never been any question at any time in this case that the gravamen of the two complaints, Brown 1 and Brown 2, the basic thrust and core of both complaints is absolutely identical. They charge that the petitioners agreed on their prices of women's clothing prior to April 1974 in Southern California, and that that agreement had the effect of causing the...
Did the Brown case start in the state court?
Pardon me? I'm sorry.
Did the case start in the state court, Brown?
The Brown case did not start in the state court, Mr. Justice White. The companion Moiti case, as right. had one of the other seven cases named Musser, yes. had originally been filed in the state court.
And how were they removed?
They were removed on the basis of a federal question and diversity of citizenship. There is complete diversity in this case.
So even if there were only state claims stated in those cases that started in the federal, in the state court, they could have been removed.
Yes.
And now Brown stated both federal and state grounds?
No, Your Honor. In Brown 1, the factual allegation of the transactions right. and offenses were exactly identical as Brown 2, but there was only one legal theory mentioned in Brown 1, and that was the violation of the Sherman Act.
Yes, and then Brown 2, state.
Brown 2 mentioned fraud, deceit, unjust restitution, and...
arising out of the same facts.
Out of the same facts that were stated in identical fashion. They were verbatim copies of the... Brown 2 was a verbatim
Brown 2
copy.
Was in the state court.
Brown 2 was originally filed in the
and
municipal
then, and
court.
And then removed.
And then it was removed.
On grounds of diversity?
It was removed on grounds of diversity, a federal question, and then there was an additional federal question ground that the issue of the scope and effect of the first judgment itself raised a federal question.
Now, what's the basis for your argument that the state grounds alleged in Brown 2 are barred by res judicata? Because they weren't stated when they were first filed in the federal court, is that it?
It's the standard principle of res judicata, and I should say, Your Honor, that the both courts below held, and we submit correctly, that if Brown had been the only case that followed on the government indictment, had it stood alone, the standard principles of res judicata would apply. And that can be stated and has been stated in numerous cases in this court, that a final judgment, and there was a final judgment in Brown 1, precludes the refiling of the same claim on matters that were raised or could have been raised in the initial case.
Well, now, do you have a case that right on that says if you file in the federal court and you state only a federal cause of action, and you lose, and then you file in federal court based on diversity, a state cause of action based on the same facts, that res judicata bars the second suit?
Yes, Your Honor. There are specific suits in the antitrust field, which we have cited in our reply brief. Most recently, the Fourth Circuit's decision in Nash County Board of Education. That was a case which came up the opposite way. The initial case was filed in state court, alleging only state law antitrust grounds. When that suit was concluded, another party, actually it was the privy of the first party, filed in federal court.
What if Brown 2 had stayed in the state courts and never been removed and stated only a state cause of action? Could the state court have, you would have asserted res judicata there too?
Yes, res judicata.
But you might have lost. And would the state court be entitled to not to try those claims and reject the res judicata claim?
Well, Your Honor, it is our understanding, and we have never seen anything contrary to this in any of the briefing or research in this case, that the same standards as to res judicata, which are applied in the federal court, are also applied in California.
Well,
we believe that the state court...
What if California didn't?
They went
ahead and tried out their fraud claim. Now, if California would permit that to go ahead, shouldn't the federal court permit it to go ahead if the case is removed on diversity grounds?
Yep. The federal court had a special interest in the connection with Brown 2 in determining and avoiding circumvention of its initial judgment in Brown 1. The federal court had already, there had been active engagement in litigation in the federal court. It had devoted time and attention to these matters. Indeed, as Mr. Justice White, you pointed out, there were state claims that were before the federal court at the same time that Brown 1 was dismissed, and it had a consideration of both the federal and state claims. Once the federal court enters a judgment, and this is really the heart of our case, Mr. Justice White, the rule of res judicata comes into play. There are crucial considerations in terms of avoiding vexatious and multiple litigation, conserving judicial resources, and promoting respect for judgments that come into play when that final judgment is entered, which was entered in Brown 1. It is certainly, and we considered it so, and the district court considered it so, very much in the interest of the district court to protect its own judgment and to determine the scope of that judgment.
Well, do you think then you could get an injunction from the federal court if you should have been able to enjoin the filing of Brown 2 in the state court?
Yes, Your Honor. We cite in our case, in our reply brief, the Fifth Circuit's decision in Woods Petroleum, which was exactly that, where the Fifth Circuit upheld an injunction by the district court against a state proceeding based on an alleged state theory which was not but could have been alleged as a pendant claim in a prior federal case. And the Fifth Circuit in Woods adopted the same rationale that I've just spoken, that once there's a final judgment in a federal court, the federal court does have the right to protect that judgment.
Well, Mr. Chapman, supposing that in federal court you have 30 days to file your notice of appeal to the Court of Appeals, and in the California system you have 120 days to file your notice of appeal from an adverse decision of the Superior Court. Do you think the principles of Angel against Bullington in cases such as that would require the federal court to adopt the 120-day principle of California rather than its own federal rules of civil procedure?
No, Your Honor, by no means. I think that the procedural rules that govern the administration and management of cases within the federal court are determined by federal law, and that the for example, the 30-day or whatever period that's established in the federal rules of appellate procedure or by statute would govern federal cases, even though on substantive law matters where a case is in federal court on diversity jurisdiction, the federal court would be bound by state law, but certainly not on these procedural matters. Let me say that there's the raising, the timing and manner in which the supposed state theories were raised in Brown, too, are very troublesome. All of these theories could have been, and there's no question about it, could have been asserted at the same time that Brown 1 is filed. And this is another basic thrust of the doctrine against splitting a cause of action and res judicata. If you bring a case, you should bring forth all your theories at one time. The complaint could have alleged state law theories. In fact, the same counsel had filed a complaint contemporaneously with Brown 1, the Moiti case, which did allege state law theories.
Well, didn't Moiti, when it started in the state court, state only as state law?
Yes.
That's all of it. That's all it ever had in it.
That is correct. And I'm saying with respect to Brown 1, Your Honor, that it's difficult to see why Brown 1.
Was the Moiti case here?
No. Moiti 1 has been voluntarily dismissed. Let me say, Your Honor, that when the defendants argued on the motion to dismiss before the district court, and I'm again talking about the first cases, Brown 1, Moiti 1, the Weinberg 7 cases, we were faced with some complaints that alleged Sherman Act violations, other complaints that alleged Cartwright Act California law violations. And we argued that the determining rule, that is the standard for determining business or property, was the same under federal law as under California law. So those issues were presented to the district court at the time that the district court dismissed Brown 1 and dismissed Moiti 1. And it disposed of all 7 cases, including the case before this court, in its entirety. The crucial difference was that in Brown, which is the only case before this court, no appeal was taken. Instead, an attempt was made to refile with different theories, all of which could have been brought before the district court. They could have been in the original complaint, but they were not. There could have been an argument presented to the district court in the context I've just mentioned that even if you hold that under federal law, retail purchasers do not meet the business or property standard, that these plaintiffs could go forward under state law. That could have been done. There could have been a motion to amend the complaint.
Chairman,
the federal rules are very liberal.
May I ask you a question? Supposing Brown had simultaneously filed his state law theories in the California court and his federal theories in the federal court. And as I understand it, the first Brown one was simply the federal theory. Is that right?
That is correct.
And the federal case, they both progressed with discovery and all the rest, and the federal case had gone to judgment first, and you had prevailed either on the legal theory that the plaintiffs didn't have standing or that there was no federal violation of some kind. Would you then have been entitled to a dismissal of the state case? That's your basic theory.
Yes, that's correct. In fact, that was exactly what happened in the Fifth Circuit Woods case, which was an injunction action. The state case that was involved there had been filed simultaneously, in fact, perhaps even prior, but in any event, it was proceeding simultaneously with the federal case. The federal case went to judgment first. And that's really the key factor of the res judicata, application of res judicata, that once there's a judgment, it resolves the matter, unless the judgment is directly attacked on appeal, as the Weinberg plaintiff did.
Now, when the Brown 2 complaint was filed, you did not in the state court move to dismiss on res judicata grounds. You removed.
That is correct.
And then after you removed, you filed your res judicata motion.
That is correct. And the district court granted the motion. The matter then went to the Court of Appeals. While Brown 2 was pending, after the dismissal of Brown 2, the plaintiff did appeal from that.
Mr. Chapman, suppose in Justice Stevens' example, the two cases being filed simultaneously and the federal case finishing first. Suppose you had then gone to the state court and said, res judicata, and the state court said, awfully sorry, but we don't apply res judicata that way in the state. And they tried the case and entered judgment against Federated, and the case then came up here. You wouldn't claim that California was constitutionally disentitled to, would you?
It's not a constitutional question. No, that's
well,
not part of our commission.
Why shouldn't the rule in the federal court in Brown, which was filed and stayed and then removed, why shouldn't the state rule apply, of res judicata apply?
Let me make clear, Your Honor, the
when it's removed on the basis of diversity.
The every indication and every case that was ever referred to in the lower courts, when this matter was briefed before the lower courts, and it wasn't briefed extensively here because it wasn't the issue decided by the Ninth Circuit.
Why shouldn't the Ninth Circuit, though, focus on what the state law is?
No, Your Honor. The fact is there is no reason to believe there is any difference whatsoever between California law and federal law on res judicata.
The Ninth Circuit didn't say that.
If I may address specifically what the Ninth Circuit did. The Ninth Circuit stated that if there had only been the Brown case, that the normal standards of res judicata, and it didn't purport to distinguish between federal or state law, would apply, and that the failure to appeal from the dismissal of Brown 1 would bar the refiling of Brown 2.
Well, both the federal courts by statute and the state courts by the Constitution are bound by the full faith and credit clause.
Precisely. And the important element here is that this was a federal judgment, and the scope of the federal judgment is a matter of federal law. This court had held that in Stoll versus Gottlieb and other cases. But the crucial distinction as to what the Court of Appeals did was as follows. The Court of Appeals said, again, if this was only one case, we would have no trouble applying res judicata. But it noted that the Weinberg cases, the other five federal cases which were dismissed at the same time as Brown 1, did appeal. They followed the orderly course and took their case up to the Ninth Circuit. Subsequently, this court in Reiter versus Sonatone held that under Section 4 of the Clayton Act, retail purchasers do state a claim of injury to their business or property. And so on the basis of that, the Weinberg cases were reversed by the Ninth Circuit and sent back to the district court. A few months later, Brown 2 was argued in the Court of Appeals. And the Court of Appeals decided this case on one ground and one ground only, and that is that because the other plaintiffs in other separately filed independent actions, the Weinberg cases, did appeal and did obtain a reversal in their case, that even though Plaintiff Brown had suffered a final judgment, had not attempted to appeal his case, but in fact attempted to refile in another litigation, that Brown is entitled to have his action reinstated because of the benefit of these of the appeal by the other parties. And that was the issue and the only issue raised in the petition for certiorari.
Well, are you saying I guess you are, that if you file on a federal cause of action in federal court, a federal question case, if out of those facts you have a pendent state claim, you must file it?
Not only
does a federal court have jurisdiction over these pendent claims, but it would have absolutely no discretion to refuse to decide the pendent claims.
Quite the contrary. The rule is well stated in cases in this court and accepted in the restatement. Again, it's a question of not splitting your cause of action, bringing all your cases at one time. The key of pendent jurisdiction is discretion, and
wasn't Brown when it's originally filed in the state in the federal court? Weren't the state claims asserted only within the jurisdiction of the federal court because of pendent jurisdiction, or what was it?
The state claims could have been based on diversity or pendent jurisdiction. There was no adjudication of that point. The state claims were permissible there because there was diversity jurisdiction.
But none were alleged, I thought you said.
In Brown, there were none alleged. In five of the other cases, in two of the other cases, they were alleged. But the key, Your Honor, if I may say this, is that...
Well, your argument doesn't depend on what happened in the other cases, does it?
That's exactly the point. But the Ninth Circuit decision depends solely on what happened to the other cases and nothing else. The Ninth Circuit ruled solely that the only reason why res judicata should be relieved in this case was that the other cases were reversed on appeal. And we submit that that creates a premium for overriding the finality of judgment in just the worst kind of cases, where you have a piling on of multiple actions in the wake of a government antitrust case, which is very typical. The only reason that this case is here is because other parties in other cases did appeal and did obtain a reversal. And we believe that to allow relief from the finality of judgments because of actions taken by other parties would only impair the ability of the district courts to coordinate and control complex multi-party class actions.
Mr. Chapman, let me interrupt you again, because there's a point of the precise way in which litigation, posture of the litigation I'd like to clarify. Under the judgment of the Ninth Circuit, as I understand it, the district court is now free to try both the federal claim and the state claim. Do you read it that way?
Yes.
And your error is really, your primary argument is they're wrong in reinstating the federal claim on the basis of the five other, reversal of the five other cases. But is it not true that there is an entirely separate legal problem as to whether or not the state claims survive? And isn't that problem one we must answer by knowing how California would interpret its doctrine of res judicata?
I would answer in two ways. First, the answer is no, that is not what the Ninth Circuit did. The Ninth Circuit understood.
You first told me they're both still standing. Both the state and federal claims are alive now.
The Ninth Circuit understood that the application of res judicata would bar the entire claim. And the term claim is not we're not dealing with forms of actions. It's the entire collection of rights and any legal theories that arise out of this transaction. The Ninth Circuit held that normally federal or state claims would be barred if this were the only case. But it relieved Brown of res judicata, which opened up the entire claim because of what happened in the other cases. There's no question but that California law and federal law are absolutely identical on what is meant by res judicata. The problem in this case is that the Ninth Circuit refused to follow any of the standards of res judicata by virtue of one fact and one fact alone, namely that the other cases, the Weinberg cases, were reversed on appeal. So there was no distinction between, there is no distinction between the law of California and...
Well, yes, but if in Brown 1, the district, and there had never been any appeals, and the district court had dismissed the complaint saying, well, I don't know anything about California law, but I know you're not a plaintiff qualified to sue under Section 4 of the Clayton Act, file any state law claims you want someplace else. You wouldn't say that he would be barred from going to the state court.
The district court could have had discretion under the doctrine of pendant jurisdiction to pull out any
there were no state claims asserted, so all he could do on the basis of what had been filed before him was say, well, I don't think you're a proper plaintiff under Section 4.
On the contrary, Your Honor, the law against splitting a cause of action makes it clear that when plaintiffs bring their actions, they cannot hold back theories in their back pocket and try their luck with the federal claim. If that doesn't work, then they have something else to fall, another line to fall back on in state courts. And the cases that we cite on the standard of splitting a cause of action all go to that. The district court does have discretion, but he must not be deprived of his opportunity to exercise discretion by not having the cases brought forward. And I would also say that the district court did know, as counsel concedes in his brief, that there was at least a potentiality of state cases at the time that Brown 1 was dismissed, because Moiti 1 was...
Wouldn't you, on this very argument, make a difference between claims that are just pendant to a federal claim or that are arguably pendant and claims that could be brought originally in the federal court based on diversity? Because then these diversity claims would independently be in... within the jurisdiction of the federal court, and there was diversity here.
There was diversity. I think the important point, Your Honor, is this, that you don't have to, and we believe in this case that no issue with respect to pendant jurisdiction is before this court.
Because
and you
there is diversity here.
Because there is diversity, but the basic rule against splitting a cause of action would apply no matter how the case got into federal court.
Well, in any event, there's only one issue before us, is there not, in the present posture of the case?
That is correct.
Only one question was... raised in the certiorari petition. Only one question is addressed in your original brief.
That is correct.
And while the respondent's brief canvasses the issues that my brothers have asked you about, that's not before us now, is it?
You are precisely correct. The question is whether there is an exception from res judicata in multiple party, multiple action litigation where...
But what if the question is, did the Court of Appeals
the question is, did the Court of Appeals properly reinstate these judgments? That's right.
The Court of Appeals, the question.
That's the question. You say they did. They should not have reinstated either the state or the federal claims.
The question is whether the Court of Appeals properly reversed the dismissal for res judicata. The grounds which were stated by the Court of Appeals was that res judicata would apply but for the action in the other multiple cases. And we say, Your Honor, that that there is absolutely no basis, indeed, respondent presents no basis for the novel ruling of the Court of Appeals in this case. I'd like to reserve a few moments I have for the response.
Mr. Hofstein.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court. The facts have been developed. Seeing the noon hour approaching, I'm going to try to concentrate on the points that we concentrated on. I believe the Court of Appeals saw, and what, in my view, the Court of Appeals tried to do was have the baby. It did not want litigation about the same complaints, if you will, in the same cognizable claim or not, before both the federal and the state court. And in so doing, ignored its own ruling in Hodge versus the Mountain States Telephone Company. Now, Hodge is very interesting because it causes me to disagree with a great deal of the authority cited by my opposition. Hodge was a case wherein summary judgment was had over both state and pendant claims in the district court. The Ninth Circuit in 1977 reversed that, saying, according to mine worker Gibbs, if there is no substantial federal question, state claims as a matter of comity belong in the state courts. That California law follows that, is cited, is stated very clearly in the case we cite as Mary versus the Community Coast College, where and I'm quoting, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeal has consistently held that where a federal claim dismissed on a motion for summary judgment before there has been a substantial expenditure of the court's time or energy on the case, proper exercise of discretion requires dismissal of the state claims without prejudice to plaintiff's right to litigate them in a proper state forum.
Well, Mr. Hofstein, I take it you would concede that the Ninth Circuit is bound by holdings of this court in matters of federal law.
Agreed. Mine worker Gibbs in this case.
I notice in your brief you give rather short shrift to the case of Reed against Allen, which was decided in 1932. On page 8, you cited simply saying that Professor Moore has criticized it in his treatise. Do you want us to overrule it?
I believe it should be. I believe it was bad law then. I believe that a rule, as many commentators have stated and many cases have said, of equity must be equitably applied. As this court said recently in Brown versus Felsen, you have to sparingly apply such a rule so as to avoid shielding wrongdoing behind a technicality.
In other words, it would be a case-by-case analysis.
Indeed, it's an equitable rule. I want to emphasize two facts with which I disagree with my opposition. Principally, what was disposed of in Brown 1? It was the question of whether or not the plaintiff could maintain a cognizable claim under Section 4 of the Clayton Act. I was in a court of limited jurisdiction. They told me, go away, in its entirety. I went to the Court of General Jurisdiction with my claims. Mary versus Community Coast College, very recent California case of Court of Appeal case on point, says I did the correct thing. Mine worker Gibbs says I did the correct thing. There was nothing to which to append state claims once we had been directed to get out of the Court of
Limited
Jurisdiction.
But you could have presented your state claims originally in the federal court, not just as pendant jurisdiction, but as on diversity grounds.
I don't believe there was diversity.
Well, how was Brown removed, eventually, Brown 2 removed, eventually, on federal question?
In a blur. There were two issues that I believe defeat diversity jurisdiction in the case at bar, to wit, Brown 2. Point number one, at the time we filed the action in the municipal court in California, the jurisdictional amount was $5,000, and that's what we pleaded per claimant, not $10,000. Under Younger Harris, that cannot be aggregated. Moreover, no injunction was sought, so the jurisdictional amount, it seems to me, cannot be generated that way. Accordingly, in my mind, and I've never seen it actually adjudicated, there was never diversity jurisdiction in this case.
Well, there wasn't federal question then either.
In my mind, there was not.
So there never the removal was wholly improper, you think?
I do.
But the Court of Appeals has decided otherwise.
I think the Court of Appeals was trying to avoid piecemeal litigation that is permissible because it didn't like it.
Suppose we disagree with you on the. Suppose we think it's important to know whether there was diversity jurisdiction. We disagree with you. Suppose we conclude that yes, there was diversity jurisdiction over these state law claims, and that they could have been filed originally with the federal claim in Brown 1.
Yes, sir.
Would that make any difference to you?
No, sir. Under Mine Worker Gibbs. Under
well, that's just a pendant case.
But once there's no federal nexus, and once we haven't gone into a trial, Mine Worker Gibbs, it seems to me there was a discussion in the beginning of the opinion wherein it said, even if you were to get into the trial on the merits of the cause, and the only merits we've had heard are whether or not we had standing to maintain a cognizable claim under Section 4 in a court of limited jurisdiction.
But in Angel against Bullington, the court says the, quote, merits, close quote, of a claim are disposed of when it is refused enforcement. I take that to mean it doesn't necessarily have to go through A, B, C, D, E, F if it dismisses it for some reason, a judgment for the defendant.
I believe, Your Honor, as I understand the premises, the increments that add up to whether or not one is entitled to res judicata effect against an opponent is whether or not some threshold bar has prevented an actual dispute, a resolution of the substance of the dispute in the case at bar, whether or not certain activity took part on the part of the department stores which caused injury to these people, these claimants in the class, the putative class.
Did you make any motion to remand the case?
I did, Your Honor, in Brown 2. In Brown 1, there was nothing to remand. The court sua sponte invited the motion from the defense to dismiss for want of standing under the Clayton Act. That motion was briefed, held under submission for a long time. It was granted. The actions were dismissed in their entirety. I read Mine Worker Gibbs. It said when there's nothing to append a state claim to, you don't belong in federal court. So we went to the only other available forum, the court of general jurisdiction, the state courts, whose rules of res judicata and the facts at bar in this Mary versus Community Coast case say we did the right thing.
So that you think the California courts would not have sustained a plea of res judicata?
No, sir.
On these facts?
Nor would the Ninth Circuit or this court, I believe, under Mine Worker Gibbs. I believe the Ninth Circuit was trying to fashion an equitable remedy in a larger sense. Was a little truncated.
Just arrives at that result by the wrong way. Wrong way.
Agreed. Hodge was their law. Hodge is what they should have followed. Hodge is what we did, following Gibbs. If this rule is undone that allows someone who's barred on a threshold bar from litigating the substance of their dispute between their parties, you have undone Mine Worker Gibbs and replete other cases.
Hodge is a Ninth Circuit case.
That's correct. Hodge versus Mountain Tell-and-Tell, 1977.
If you really mean what you say, it seems to me you are conceding that if you say that the Ninth Circuit arrived at the right result for the wrong reason, you really aren't you really suggesting or really conceding that the reinstatement of the federal claim is wrong?
Yes.
I take it under the Cartwright Act you get treble damages, is that right?
I did not plead a Cartwright Act claim in Brown 2, but yes, sir, that is the case.
Well, we just have a common law claim, is that
correct?
What it is? So then you're asking for single damages in this.
Correct.
And also you don't have the benefit of the prima facie. Well, there was a consent. What happened in the government?
There was no indictment in the relevant geographic market.
I see.
Well, the California court wouldn't have... Brown, too, when you filed in the state court, did you state your federal claim, too, or was it all state?
I was told. I was dismissed for wrong standing.
Did you see
any other federal claim.
Well, I know. So did you state a federal claim in the state courts in Brown, too?
No. Not in my
solely opinion. State.
Correct.
Well, let's see. The Court of Appeals gave you more than you asked for then when they reinstated the Brown 1 judgment, right?
When my law clerk asked me when he saw the decision what happened, I told him I didn't lose.
Well, tell me what happened.
You didn't lose, yeah.
Tell me what happens when you if the Ninth Circuit is affirmed, the judgment is affirmed by us. What are you going to do when you go back to district court? Say, sorry, I don't want you to hear me on the federal claim. Hear me on the state claim.
Well, at this point, the federal claim would now somehow or another be. I would like to be in the state court. I think my clients have made. I know my clients. One of them, an attorney, has made the election to proceed in state court under the state claims. We have, frankly, a district judge which has shown no affection for the cause.
Well, that doesn't answer my question. What are you going to do if we affirm? What are you going to do in the district court about the reinstated federal claim?
Well, I believe
you say you're not entitled to.
I'm sorry, I don't follow.
Which you just said you're not entitled to, as I understood it.
I was asked a narrow question, and I tried to answer it straightforwardly.
Yes, you did, I think.
I believe we would be a stop from relitigating the question of whether or not we have standing under the Clayton Act.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And to the extent more is asked,
you're not barred from trying your state claim.
No, sir. You're going to run right into the state of California if you rule that we can't in this Mary Coast case. Square in. I believe this is a paradigm case, and I'm willing to stand or fall on its reasoning. The California Court of Appeal. In that case, do I presume on the patience of the court?
Perhaps it's a silly question, but you're not going back to the state court. You're going to confine yourself to the state claims, but you're in the federal court to stay, aren't you?
It's not clear to me to what it would be.
Well, there was a motion to remand that was denied.
Didn't
that settle where the case will be tried?
That could very well settle that. And it could be heard in the district court if that were the pleasure.
But if, I don't know, what do you suppose the district court will do if it were determined, for example, that the Court of Appeals was wrong in reinstating the federal claim and that only the state claims are there?
I believe it would have discretion power to act, undermine Worker Gibbs.
It's hardly for the district court to determine that the Court of Appeals was wrong, is it?
No, sir.
No, I'm saying if we said the Court of Appeals was wrong in reinstating the federal claim.
I believe that the district court would have the option as a matter of discretion.
Am I correct in understanding that you are no longer supporting the judgment of the Court of Appeals?
No, I support the ultimate conclusion of the Court of Appeals and much of its reasoning. I believe that made it
not its reasoning.
I made a great deal of its reasoning, certainly its equitable premises. I believe that it made an elaborate ruling to try and avoid, to give each side something. In their case,
it ruled primarily on equitable grounds, as it said. But you now go back to the federal court, and I understood you to say that you thought that was an error.
I said that it was that our Clayton 4 cause, if any, is now expired.
If you thought it was an error, why didn't you file a cross claim?
Cross petition in this court?
A cross petition.
Because
in this court.
It was my reading of the rules, hopefully an accurate one, that once the case was brought up, irrespective of the narrow point, once the entire file would be brought forward, the ultimate reasoning of the court and the increments of its reasoning, I've been led to believe that this court in particular deals with substance, not form.
Well, perhaps.
Thank you.
Do you have anything further?
I would like, Mr. Chief Justice, to make two brief points. First, the issue that is presented in this petition is the Ninth Circuit's ruling that in multiple party actions, the appeal by certain parties relieves the party who didn't appeal from the normal application of res judicata. It's our submission, for the reasons in our briefs, that this would create a tremendous a hardship and burden in the administration of complex multiple-party class actions. The respondent's submission, Your Honors, would, if accepted, create a burden in all cases, because he is arguing in favor of piecemeal litigation, that you don't have to bring forward, once you come into a federal court or whatever court with your first complaint, you don't have to bring forward all your theories, you don't have to bring forward all your rights for recovery, and you don't have to give the district court discretion to choose whether or not to handle all the cases in one time. So we believe that the issue presented by respondents is not properly here, and we urge reversal of the Ninth Circuit and reinstatement of the district court's decision.
Thank you, gentlemen. The case is submitted. We'll hear arguments next in...